Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday. This hour of our program, we're going to be linking two people who have had, and one continues to have, a major impact on gun violence prevention. One died last week. We wanted to pay tribute to him, James Brady, former press secretary to President Ronald Reagan. As you'll recall, James Brady was severely wounded during an assassination attempt on the president. The second has paid tribute to James Brady. She is very young. She just turned 18 years old. And on her Twitter page, the day of Brady's death, she wrote, "Rest in peace, James Brady. We will carry on the work to end gun violence in America in your name and in your honor." Sarah Clements is our guest. Sarah recently graduated from Newtown High School. Her mother is a teacher at Sandy Hook Elementary School and a survivor of the shooting in December of 2012. Sarah founded and leads the Junior Newtown Action Alliance. It is the student branch of the Newtown Action Alliance, and they are working in the area of gun violence prevention. Sarah recently graduated from Newtown, and I understand she's about to begin her freshman year at Georgetown University. Congratulations to her. We'll be welcoming phone calls during the course of the hour. We have a lot to talk about first. If you'd like to join us, our number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. We're on Facebook at The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Sarah Clements, hello. Thank you for being with us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I saw you on television last week, and I was just amazed by your composure, and what you had to say was so profound, and all the difficulties you've lived through, and I thought we just have to have her on the air. So I thank you so much for joining us. And congratulations, you're about to start college soon, huh?
Yes, well, thank you so much for those kind words, and yes, I'm very excited. I'm going to be starting at Georgetown, like you said, in actually just a few days.
Have a wonderful college experience. You have so much else going on, too. You're going to be a very busy person. It's interesting to me, and I heard you pay tribute to James Brady on television last week, but out of this profound disability that he experienced and this profound, horrendous attack on him and the horrendous attack on your mom's school, she was a teacher at Newtown Elementary, and it so affected your community, both you and James Brady, decided to become people who are going to look at the issue of gun violence and do it so seriously. So you took this horrible event, and instead of just, which would have been understandable, getting in bed for the next few years and not seeing the daylight, you've decided to work on the issue.
Absolutely. I mean, that's such a great way to put it. The phrase that I like to use is honor with action. So that's something that came out of our Newtown community, especially those of us who tried to transform our pain into positive action. It really means honoring those that were killed by taking action for positive common sense change to make our communities safer. And you're so right about James Brady. You know, we in this movement, this gun violence prevention movement, often say, you know, this fight is a marathon, and we're just in the first mile or just in the first few miles still. And James Brady really kicked off this marathon for us. And now in his honor and in his name, we'll continue this marathon, continue fighting for however long it takes to get to the finish line, which is an end to gun violence mm-hmm. in America. You know, an untold number of people are alive today because of the law that bears his name, the Brady Law, the Brady Bill. In the last 20 years that the Brady Bill has been in effect, which ushered in background checks, waiting periods for many gun buyers, and which created the NICS background check system, over 107 million background checks have been conducted, and more than 2 million attempted purchases were blocked because the individuals were deemed ineligible to possess firearms, whether they were a criminal, a domestic abuser, or dangerously mentally ill. And, you know, these are people that both sides agree should not be able to own guns. And each one of these 2 million cases over the last 20 years could have been another shooting, another victim, another name, another vigil, another Sandy Hook even. So I know that, you know, in his legacy, we will continue to push through. Millions are starting to stand up, especially especially after what happened in my town.
Yes.
It opened so many people's eyes. And like he said to other advocates at one point, we have to continue to fight fiercely. He and his wife, Sarah, campaigned for 12 years after he was shot. It took them 12 years to pass the Brady Bill in Congress. So often gun violence prevention activists get discouraged because, you know, we're almost like the Davids going up against this Goliath that is the gun lobby. And sometimes it feels impossible to win with, you know, this common sense that we're trying to push forward. But James Brady really embraced what fate dealt him, like you mentioned, and to my mom as well, and to anybody that's been affected by gun violence, and used that to change the country for the better. He taught us that persistence and, unwavering wit and kindness.
Yes.
And the family of the movement that we are, and motivation of honoring, those killed with action, like I mentioned, to prevent it from happening again, can and will eventually win the day. He proved to victims like my mom and victims of gun violence and survivors everywhere that not only are they never alone in their pain and in their healing, but also that it's possible to refuse to back down, to say that in spite of what we've been through, we can still fight to make America safer. We have a lot of long and tough battles to come. This is a long fight, and James Brady showed us that with courage and optimism and persistence, we can succeed.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, what's really striking about you as well, to speak so eloquently of him and to realize what your age is, and you have said that young people are rarely told that their stories and their visions of a safer nation matter, but they do, perhaps more than anything else in this conversation. It is your generation, the millennial generation, that has been disproportionately affected by this kind of violence.
Oh, absolutely. It's so important that as we move forward with this work and with preventing gun violence, whether it's legislative change or cultural change or building bridges between communities that have been affected, it's so important to have young people at the table, to have our voices heard and to be part of the decision making on this issue, on any issue, but on this issue as well. Like you said, young people, young Americans, my generation is the most disproportionately affected by gun violence. If statistics hold true for the next few months, projections show that in 2015, gun violence will be the leading cause of death for my generation. That's striking. And our voices and our stories have to be told, have to be heard. These are our friends. These are, our family members. If we continue to let gun violence persist as it is, we are just breaking down the promise that our generation has for the next, decades, the next few decades. It's stunning.
Mm-hmm.
So, young people, students are beginning to stand up on college campuses and high schools, and not only young people that have been affected, but also ones that just say, I've seen what this can do to people my age. I've seen what this does to communities, and I don't want to be next. Hundreds of students are standing up. Hundreds of young people are standing up around the country to say enough is enough.
And when you talk about building bridges, I was reading your Twitter account earlier today, and I know that you have paid attention to the Mike Brown killing in Ferguson, Missouri yesterday that's resulted in a couple nights of pretty, pretty tough circumstances in that town, very questionable circumstances surrounding his shooting. And I think of the two of you, very different lives, but both affected your families by gun violence. He was about to begin college in the next few days, just as you are, and you were about the same age. It's yet another instance of trying to understand a racial divide in this country, that also there is a violence, gun violence component to the racial divide.
Absolutely. Like you said, building bridges for me and for many other activists is incredibly important. There's so many different types of gun violence that occurs, like you said, whether it's mass shootings or suicides or day-to-day gun violence on the streets. Domestic violence. There are so many ways that gun violence affects Americans. And so, not only are we building bridges between different age groups, different races and genders, but also those communities that have been affected in different ways. And that's really one of the cornerstones of Junior Newtown Action Alliance and of the efforts of a network that I co-lead of hundreds of, dozens of young activists around the country. We are incredibly diverse, and we make an effort to build relationships that will become the foundation of our activism for the years to come. Even though we do have to have these difficult conversations about, that racial component and other, difficult topics, young people see the need to have those conversations. We can no longer avoid them because, what stems from having those conversations is strategies and solutions that we can come up with and implement together. To help all communities. All communities are affected by gun violence. One phrase that I tend to say is that gun violence does not discriminate. And so those conversations absolutely need to be had, and young people recognize that. And, like you said, Twitter is a great place to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. Anybody can go on Twitter. Anybody can say what they feel, and we can have these conversations oftentimes amicably. A lot of times there are, some sort of negative back and forth, but I've found that through Twitter rallies and trending hashtags and Twitter town halls, young people and youth organizations tend to lead the way for having these amicable, strategy-based conversations.
I have seen people from Newtown who were affected by that horrendous tragedy make their way to Washington, D.C., to the halls of Congress. It appears to me, and you will have firsthand knowledge of this certainly, that a number of people in Newtown have become activists when it comes to gun violence.
Yes, definitely. And one of the groups, and the one that I'm most involved with, is Newtown Action Alliance. We are an action-based grassroots organization, and we try to address the issue of gun violence through sort of three components, like I mentioned before: smarter and safer gun laws, comprehensive cultural change, and by building bridges. And we did, attend the March on Washington right after 12/14, right after the shooting at Sandy Hook, and from there we call ourselves accidental activists. Mm. Because none of us, knew each other really before what happened. None of us would have expected to be in this fight. That's sort of how we began. And we tend to, in terms of the legislative change that I mentioned that we try to help move forward, we do try to go to Congress every few months to lobby, Democrats and Republicans, conservatives and liberals, and just meet with them and have these conversations. Sharing our story is one of the most important pieces of what we do when we go to Washington. We feel like that really makes it a real issue. It steps away from, even though those numbers that, 30,000 Americans a year are killed by gun violence, everybody knows those statistics by now, unfortunately. But it's the names and the stories that really make an impact. And I've actually found, going back to the youth advocacy aspect of that, one of the first times that I met with members of Congress, I was sort of, implanted with a group of other adults that were meeting. And I, would raise my voice and I would share my story and share my thoughts and talk about ways that I think members of Congress can work with their constituents to move forward. But I found that they really reacted to what I and maybe a couple of other young people in the room had to say differently than they did with adults. So when we headed back to Newtown after that day, I told myself that my next goal would be for the next time that we went to D.C. To lobby members of Congress, I wanted to have just a group, one or two groups that were completely made up with students, so Junior Newtown Action Alliance members. And we did that. So the next time we went, I was with just a group of young people, of mostly high school students, a couple of college students, and even a middle schooler. And those meetings were so different than the other ones that I had been in.
Really? How so?
Members of Congress and their staffers really took to our stories much more emotionally. Mm-hmm. They really grasped what we had to say. I felt on just such a higher level. They would even say to us at times, you know, oh, wow, we've never had, you know, we rarely have students come in. Oh. Or, you know, we rarely have students miss school to speak with legislators that, you know, they've probably never even met or heard of before. But I found that the most incredible part of it was, you know, young people are creative, and we are really good at problem solving. And when it came time during these meetings to talk to them about how we can help them push forward, you know, finishing the job, like James Brady would say, and expanding universal background checks to all private sales and online sales, so many members of Congress would say to us, you know, I know what the right thing to do is. I know that I should vote for expanding universal background checks, but I just can't because I'm afraid that I will be voted out, or I'm afraid that, you know, the other side is so much louder than gun violence prevention advocates, even though we are the majority. They're so much louder, and so they scare members of Congress into voting no for background checks, for example. So for the rest of the meetings, we would really work with them to figure out strategies on how we can, you know, partner them with advocates in their districts or in their states to really work together and bring awareness and education to their districts, so that they knew, you know, deep down that, okay, and now I can vote for universal background checks or legislation to keep domestic abusers and stalkers from possessing firearms, and I won't be voted out. I can run on gun reform as part of my platform and win an election. And so they were definitely more receptive to that type of conversation when they're speaking with young people.
And I would imagine they have the image of you and other young people in the front of their minds. It's not what they normally see. And you indeed are the future. And so you have to listen to your words, and they make a different kind of impact because you're young.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think they're, you know, heartened to see that, you know, the next generation is more open-minded. We do have better ways of having these conversations and not getting hostile or partisan and things like that. So I definitely think that members of Congress and, you know, even local and state officials have seen when students, you know, attend town hall meetings and things like that, they are inspired by them. And I hope to see, that's why I hope to see young people really begin to take the stage and demand a seat at the table to having these conversations.
Mm-hmm. When you mentioned that one of the goals is to come up with strategies and solutions to lessen gun violence in this country, what are those things that we could do that are smarter and safer?
Right. So, you know, some of the things that young advocates are doing right now, especially for school that's starting soon, a lot of young activists are planning on starting groups on their college and high school campuses in the next couple of months to, you know, really create a community of activists and advocates on this issue. A lot of activists that I know are hoping to attend town hall meetings in August during the recess, as well as in September, to demand an answer and to hear, you know, specifically how candidates feel before they vote for them in November on this issue. And then we're also, you know, really pushing for, and this is, you know, all in terms of legislative change, of course, hoping to push forward what we're calling Protect All Women types of legislation. So Wisconsin is actually leading on this. In April of this year, Governor Scott Walker signed the Stopping Abuse Facilities Through Enforcement, the SAFE Act,
mm-hmm.
Which gives law enforcement new tools to enforce existing laws and which makes domestic abusers subject to restraining orders required to turn in their guns or undergo a judicial process if there is a complaint or situation that arises. So, you know, Wisconsin has really led on this and has the potential to show the rest of the country that this policy of protecting victims of gun violence and stalking from gun violence really works and, you know, doesn't take away Second Amendment rights and things like that. This is really common sense, and it's protecting victims of domestic violence. And young people really feel strongly about this type of legislation. So that's definitely a cornerstone of the legislative advocacy that we're going to be pushing forward. And then in terms of cultural change, there are tons and tons of groups, national, state, and local organizations that are led by young people or that have student branches that continue to put on, you know, summits and conferences, roundtable discussions, and, you know, even if it's on Twitter, Twitter town halls, Twitter rallies, to try and, you know, bring awareness and education to the facts and to the situation of gun violence in America, to really show young people, but really everybody, that there is something that you can do in your community. Whether, you know, it could be as simple as asking, you know, the Brady campaign and Every Town for Gun Safety have both continued to ask parents to, you know, when their child goes over to a friend's house for a play date, asking the parents if there is a loaded firearm in the house, and if so, to please store it safely. So many children that you hear on the news are killed
yes.
by negligent shootings, and, you know, this is a part of cultural change, is having parents ask. It's as simple as that. So really that education and awareness piece is also really important to young advocates.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, I'm sure that you're asked this frequently, and it does make it any easier to talk about what happened, but tell me about where your mom was that horrendous day, December of 2012. She was a teacher. She is a teacher at Sandy Hook Elementary School. Just tell me about what she witnessed, how she escaped, and then when you decided and how you decided that you were going to become an activist on this.
Yeah, I'm, you know, my mom, like you said, is a second grade teacher at Sandy Hook Elementary School. We moved here probably about 10 years ago, and actually, you know, we moved to Newtown from Dallas, Texas, because it was safer and because of the school district, which really, you know, hits you.
It sure does.
And my mom, you know, that day they were, her class was planning on cutting out snowflakes for the winter concert that was going to happen in the gym that day and that week. And, you know, she started hearing the sounds, the popping sounds of the gunshots. And so she walked outside. She didn't know what it was at first, and she walked outside into the hall. And at first she thought it was folding chairs falling because, like I said, they were setting up for this concert that was going to happen right across the hall from her. And then the lead janitor actually sprinted by her towards the front of the school, and that's when it hit her what that sound actually was. And so she pulled in two kids that actually were walking down the hall to bring the attendants down to the main office, which is where the shooting, you know, the shooting happened in that area. She pulled the two kids into her room, and for the next 5 minutes or so while the shooting happened, sang Christmas songs to them, read them children's books, and just tried to, as hard as she could, to muffle out the sound of the gunshots, because they could hear every single one. And she ended up, you know, there was a knock on the door, and it was, you know, she couldn't tell who it was at first, so she didn't open it. But then the police officer slid his badge under the door, and so she opened it, and she ran with her class all the way down to the firehouse. And at the time, I was a junior in high school, and I was in my physics classroom, and we were in lockdown for a really long time. And after about 20 or 30 minutes, that's when we really all realized that this wasn't a drill. And so I checked my phone, and I saw that my dad texted me, shooting at Sandy Hook. You know, at first, I don't even think my head comprehended the fact that it could be the school. I just thought it was like Sandy Hook Center or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I texted back, and he said yes at the school, and I had to wait some time before I knew that my mom, that I heard from him that my mom was alive. And I'll never forget that time. That felt like forever, waiting to know if she was okay. And, you know, so we lost friends. Obviously my mom knew all of the teachers that died. I knew a couple of them personally. And the next few weeks, you know, I think it was all, you know, it's all a blur to me mostly, but one thing that I do remember, obviously, is going down to the March on Washington. Like I mentioned before, it was actually the first time that I left Newtown after it happened, and I went with my dad and about 100 other people from Newtown, and we marched with 6,000 other Americans to demand action after what happened. And that is what really opened my eyes to the activism piece of it. It showed me that not only was I not alone in this, but that Newtown wasn't alone, and that this was bigger than Sandy Hook. This was bigger than just Newtown or what my family had been through. This affected thousands and thousands of people and hundreds of communities, and I just felt in that moment and after and ever since, really, that I needed to do something. I needed to honor with action and try to change things.
Sarah Clements is our guest this hour. Sarah has just graduated from Newtown High School. She's about to begin her freshman year at Georgetown University. Her mom was, as she so eloquently described her teaching experience at Sandy Hook Elementary School. She is a survivor of the shooting in 2012. Sarah founded and leads the Junior Newtown Action Alliance. It is the student branch of the Newtown Action Alliance, and it formed after the shooting, aiming to make legislative and cultural change. What's interesting, she said, of course, this goes way beyond Newtown, and they are linking with people who have experienced gun violence in various parts of the country. She's been in Washington, D.C., talking to legislators with other young people about what she has lived through and the kinds of attention that is needed to make change in this society. We're going to welcome some phone calls for her. The conversation came about partially because of we wanted to pay tribute to the work of James Brady, who had an extraordinary life. And like Sarah, in the aftermath of great personal tragedy for him, he went on to work on the issue of gun violence in this country. And we wanted to pay tribute to his work. He, of course, died last week. And now a medical examiner is saying it was a homicide because he died as the result of a long struggle with gunshot wounds. We are going to welcome some phone calls. Here's how you reach our conversation, or you can send us a message if you would like. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. You can also send us an email. That's talk@wpr.org. We always like to have messages on our Facebook page, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Sarah Clements is our guest now, founder and leader of the Junior Newtown Action Alliance, the student branch of the Newtown Action Alliance grassroots organization formed after the horrendous shooting. We're taking phone calls for her. If you'd like to join us, 800-486-8655 is our number. John is calling in. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you doing?
All right, how are you?
Very good. I'm a nationwide truck driver. I see a lot of stories in different newspapers throughout my travels. But one thing I was wondering about, I guess, is how do we go about identifying groups that would like to hinder gun laws in different areas of the country, and how do we identify them to the voter and to the common citizen? I guess the reason being is a lot of those people that are hindering this prospective legislation are kind of misinformed as to what lawmakers are trying to do with this legislation or proposed legislation. Why are they against it, I guess? And who are they? And how do we get their message of not having any gun laws at all to the forefront of just the regular average voter? I guess it seems to me that's a major roadblock. A lot of people, even in my area, are against any gun laws at all. But they don't really know, I guess, what those gun laws would really be about. They just think it's going to be all or nothing, where they're not going to be able to have their hunting rifles. They're not going to be able to have protection. But, I mean, there's a lot of misinformation there, and I'm just wondering how we go about as a nation trying to get that misinformation corrected.
Thank you, John, for your call. Sarah?
Yeah, that's such a great point. There are definitely lots of groups. I will start just by saying there are lots of groups in Wisconsin that are working to prevent gun violence. There is a Moms Demand Action Wisconsin chapter. There's the Milwaukee Violence Free Zone and Wisconsin Anti-Violence Effort, among others. But really, to the heart of your question, so much of what we see when talking about this conversation is misinformation, like you mentioned, and a lot of that comes from the NRA, the gun lobby, that continues to push out propaganda and misinformation. And really scare tactics, really pushing forward this narrative that, like you said, every gun law is going to take away all the guns, or that the government is trying to take away all the guns. And it's really so wrong. What these pieces of legislation are doing is cracking down on individuals that everybody agrees should not be able to own firearms. It's like I mentioned before with the Protect All Women legislation, it's making sure that domestic abusers and stalkers and dating partner abusers don't have possession of guns. These are such common step measures. And really, I think the way to push that forward is to be louder than that sort of fringe element of the other side. The vast majority of gun owners in America are for universal background checks. A poll recently came out in early July, I believe, and it was a Quinnipiac poll that asked, once again about a year and a half after 12/14, after the Newtown shooting, whether people believe that we should have stronger gun control laws. And really that messaging and that framing is so important, because what they found in the survey is that when you ask, do you think that we should have stronger gun control laws, when people hear that gun control, they immediately think of that scare tactic narrative that I mentioned, that all the guns are going to be taken away, et cetera. And people tend to have a mix, sort of a lower percentage of people will say that they are for gun control. But when you rephrase it, when you say, okay, so let's dig deeper into that. Do you believe that we should implement or that we should pass universal background checks mm-hmm. to ensure that criminals and the dangerously mentally ill cannot possess or own firearms? And 92% of Americans not only believe in gun reform just in general, and that's why we say reform and not control, because it is really reforming the laws, but when we say that and when we really dig into what these laws actually are, when we say it's universal background checks or legislation to protect women from gun violence, that's when almost everybody says, yes, of course, that's just common sense. So really reframing the conversation, reframing the messaging, not because we're changing the narrative or what it is talking about, but because it separates us from that just misinformation and that scare tactic narrative that the NRA and the rest of the gun lobby tries to push forward.
Thank you very much, John, for the call. Do you sense, when you talk about meeting with members of Congress and they're saying, listen, I'm with you, but I'm not going to get reelected, so I can't do anything about this. Do you sense any inklings of the beginning of a shift in that attitude, that people are becoming so concerned about this kind of violence in our society that it is an issue, that there is more money for television ads that point to gun violence as an issue, that there is more pressure for those who we have elected to have their views coincide with, as you said, 92% of the American public?
I think we are absolutely in a turning point. A new poll actually was just released by, I believe, the University of Michigan Children's Hospital National Poll on Children's Health. And they've been doing this poll for years and years, and for the first time in the survey's history this year, a top concern of American parents and families is gun violence in schools and communities, for the first time in the survey's history. This is absolutely at the top of people's concerns. And, you know, our movement for the first time ever after Newtown has really become what that is, a movement, a grassroots movement that works collectively, that's on the ground in every state. You know, especially in the next couple of months, you will see people going to town hall meetings and demanding to know where candidates stand, where elected officials stand on this issue. And we are starting to get mobilized and really show that that numerical majority that we do have really can make the impact during elections. The NRA and the gun lobby obviously has an immense amount of political power because they have been implemented into our legislative process for more than 30 years. And if you think about that compared with how far we've come since 1214, since Newtown, in just you know, about a year and a half or a little more, that's really stunning. We've really done so much. You know, every town for gun safety has this Gun Sense Voter Initiative that anybody can go online and sign this postcard that will be delivered to members of Congress that say that this coming midterm election and beyond, they will be a single issue voter on gun violence prevention, where those candidates and elected officials stand on gun reform. That's never happened before. We've never had that accountability from our side of the issue. And it's really stunning because these are moms, these are dads, these are teachers and students that are doing this grassroots, ground-level work. And we are really coming out and saying that enough is enough, and we will not vote for, we will not stand for elected officials siding with the gun lobby anymore. It will take time, but this is the first national election that we've had since 1214. And so this is really going to build a lot of the foundation that we move forward on afterwards in the coming months and years to see how we can move forward common sense in our legislative process.
Kelly is next in Edgerton. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Kathleen. I am really enjoying this program. I get nervous on the radio.
Oh, don't be nervous.
I was having this discussion with my son, who's in the military. He's active. He said what I thought was a good idea. And there's a lot of veterans retired looking for work and would be so happy to be in a school setting and protect children. And I just wanted to pass that along as maybe another way of solving part of the problem, in addition to all the other wonderful ideas coming from this young lady I'm on today.
And when you say protect children, what would be their role, Kelly? What would you see them doing?
The way that we discussed it and what I see is just to have them in the school and be sort of like an aide, be around the school, associate with the children, try to be a good role model, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody to keep an eye on things, somebody who's used to protecting their fellow man.
Sarah, what do you think?
That's an interesting idea. I do want to step away from, you know, the idea of, and I know that you didn't mention this yet, but the idea that a lot of people on the other side, especially that Wayne LaPierre came out and said after what happened in my town that we should have armed guards standing
right
in every school hallway. That's definitely something that we want to avoid. That's something that countless number of parents have said that they don't want to happen. It just doesn't make them feel safer. Study after study, case after case has shown that more guns does not mean more safety. I think that the idea of having veterans, you know, working as maybe counselors or working in the counselor's office or just being those supportive role models is a great idea. And I do want to talk about, there has actually been a lot of mobilization on the part of especially Congresswoman Gabby Gifford's group, Americans for Responsible Solutions, in terms of reaching out to veterans. They have Veterans for Responsible Solutions as one of their factions, and they're really about bringing together veterans that are for these common sense steps and that are for bringing safety to our communities and that are for, you know, pushing for like I said, that sort of legislative and cultural change. And I think what you explained, your idea that you and your son had, that's something that Americans for Responsible Solutions might even be interested in hearing and having that conversation with.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely, that goes back to my point about how this is absolutely a grassroots level movement. It's veterans, it's parents, it's students coming together, teachers coming together to make our community safer in any way. And it can be new ways and old ways, ways that haven't been implemented yet, but to come together really as communities as a whole to make our schools and families and homes safer.
Kelly, thank you. Linda in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi, I'm just kind of walking in on the conversation. I appreciate what I've heard so far. It's just a point and a question. In 1976, I actually witnessed a double murder. A kid was shot in the head, and another one was in the stomach, and he died on the way to Frater Hospital. And the third one lived. I spoke out. I was on TV. I witnessed it. I went to court. I did what I could do. And I know people are more afraid, but at the time, I remember specifically talking to a police officer, and he said one out of three people, and this was back in 76, carried guns in their cars. And I was busy with my life, had to work and go to school, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, was that even accurate, what this cop said? Is that true now? And I think people have to pay more attention and start speaking out when they see things, because we have a lot of distraction, and take the energy and strength to do something about it, especially if you're a witness. At that time, I got no support.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of guns in our society, aren't there, Sarah?
Oh, absolutely. It's actually the highest rate of gun ownership per capita. It's almost equal to one per person. That's out on the streets or in homes in the U.S. It's the highest per capita in the developed world, which is stunning. I actually do not know the answer to your question about guns and cars. That's definitely something that I will look into, and a very interesting fact and statistic that I haven't looked into. But you know, I'm so sorry, first of all, that you didn't get any support at that time, and I commend you for your courage to speak out and have your voice heard and do justice to the situation that you witnessed and that happened. It's so, so important, and I do think, like you said, that if you are a witness to something or if you are a survivor or a victim, that there is, and, you know, it might be the fact that there wasn't really a gun violence prevention community before Newtown. And now sort of communities are coming together. It's also with the help of social media. There are groups on Facebook that are support systems for witnesses and survivors and victims' family members. But there is absolutely a gun violence prevention community that that really has this philosophy of honoring those that were lost with action. And there are actually tons of amazing activists in Wisconsin. There's one woman that comes to mind. Her name is Sarah Engel, and she's a survivor of domestic violence case with a gun. And she's been joined by other survivors of gun violence from around the country. She recently went to Washington, D.C. to meet with leaders to talk about legislation to ensure that domestic abusers do not have access to guns. I'd like to think this one quote that she said that really stuck to me. She said that she survived for a reason, to tell her story and to bring changes to this broken system, and more needs to be done. And this is a time for all of us, especially those with the power to change laws, to listen. So there are absolutely incredible, incredible people in your own state who are advocating for change, and I urge you to join them if you can, but if not, thank you for all that you've done. are.
Sarah Clements is our guest. We have a few more minutes with her. She just graduated from Newtown High School. Her mother, a teacher at Sandy Hook Elementary School. She was recently honored at the 8th Annual Women to Watch Awards in Washington, D.C. She just turned 18. She's going to Georgetown University, and she formed and leads the Junior Newtown Action Alliance, the student branch of the Newtown Action Alliance. I heard her speak the day that James Brady died, and she paid tribute to him, and I thought her voice was very important because we don't often hear from people who are her age, who are so committed to this and whose lives have been forever transformed by what she had to go through and her mom had to go through. So we had invited her, and I'm glad we did, to this program. We have time for, I hope, a couple more phone calls. We'll take them in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Time for maybe one or two more phone calls. Wayne in Holman is next. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
And hi, guest. I think you sound like a very nice young lady and a committed young lady. I am a lifetime member of the NRA and proud of it. I wished we could have time to talk about our Eddie Eagle program, which we go into the schools, and I'm not sure either one of you know what that is. But let's talk about when callers call up and say we don't have gun laws on the books. There are 2,700 federal gun laws on the books currently against illegal use of firearms. Sadly, the state AGAs in all of the 50 states are not enforcing them. And that's a sad, that to me, that is sad. And another point I'd like to make, and this, the white cop that I think killed, and I'm going to go so far as to say murdered that black youth in Missouri. I got no time for this guy if I've heard what I've heard is true. But I'm wondering, where is the black leadership on black-on-black killings that are going on in Chicago in a tremendous number? This is, I mean, where are the black leadership folks that are coming out and saying, hey, guys, we got to stop killing each other?
All right, let's start with his point about there are 2,700 laws on the books, Sarah.
So there absolutely are pieces of legislation that that are on the books, like you said, many of them are enforced. Actually, recently in the last couple of months, the House was able to pass a resolution to increase funding for the NICS background check system, which directly impacts enforcement. One of the main reasons why a lot of these background check systems aren't up to date with records is because they aren't funded properly, because they don't have enough funding. And so this absolutely directly impacted that sort of enforceability point that you mentioned, and hopefully will pass in the Senate and will provide millions of dollars into the system to help law enforcement and to help the system work better. The only way that the universal background check system is going to work is if all the records are there. So that was absolutely a win for people who want to see higher enforcement, more enforcement, and for people who are advocating for gun violence prevention measures. But there are definitely loopholes that exist, that there aren't any laws on the federal or on the state level that don't address certain issues. For example, there is legislation that ensures that domestic abusers cannot possess firearms, but there's no legislation that says that stalkers, misdemeanor stalkers, or dating partner abusers, who actually commit domestic violence with guns at the same rate as domestic abusers, cannot possess firearms. So there's absolutely a loophole there in the system that is not addressed on the federal level or in many states. And that's actually one of the places, like I mentioned before on the program, that Wisconsin is leading in. You guys passed that legislation and
right.
It's enforced, and the numbers show that it works, which is incredible. So hopefully you guys can be leaders for the rest of the states that have this loophole that isn't enforced because it doesn't exist.
And as to issue number two, Wayne, that's the subject for another show, and we will probably be on that issue sometime next week. We just can't handle it in the minute that's left. Sarah Clements, all the best to you as you begin your college education. You're already doing great things in the world, and we'll be following you, ma'am.
Thank you. And I'd just like to thank you so much, Jen. Thanks to the questions that I received. And if your listeners are interested, the Newtown Action Alliance and Newtown Foundation will be holding our second annual national vigil for all victims of gun violence at the Washington National Cathedral in December. So if anybody is interested, if you've been affected by gun violence and would like to attend, or if you'd like to host a state vigil at that time, please go to our website and learn more.
Thank you, Sarah. And we've linked to that on our Facebook page, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Sarah Clements, just beginning Georgetown University. She was a graduate of Newtown High School. Her mom, a teacher at Sandy Hook Elementary School, talking about what she is doing now. She's an inspiration. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to KP for on-air production as well.